How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Happy Friday. It's time to look back at the last 7 days and make sense of the biggest news stories in our weekly news recap. From a jury finding Donald Trump guilty of 34 felonies.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker had this to say, quote, "Justice has been served."
The Illinois Republican Party is firmly standing behind Donald Trump, with the chairman calling it a, quote, "political prosecution."
To Illinois legislators finally passing a budget.
State lawmakers approve a proposed $53 billion spending plan for Illinois.
We dived into those headlines and more with our panel of journalists, including Amanda Vinicky, correspondent for Chicago Tonight on WTTW and host of Week in Review, Alex Degman, Statehouse reporter for WBEZ, and Simone Alisea, executive producer of the CityCast Chicago podcast and newsletter. We started off by talking about potential unrest leading up to the elections, especially after yesterday's guilty verdicts of Donald Trump. Here in Chicago, we are expecting protests during the Democratic convention, but the Republican convention's coming up in Milwaukee, and Trump's sentencing is set a few days before the start of the RNC. So I asked the panel what they thought Milwaukee might see. Here's Amanda.
First of all, I've covered several conventions before, and it's really interesting to see the contrast between the RNC and the DNC. The whole mood is just different. The sort of attendees, what they wear, how the process goes. This is, of course, going to be historic. We've never had a situation like this. I think that there's a lot of folks who are still processing. We, of course, have been so focused because, as Chicagoans, focused on just what it means for residents to get, you know, to and from, go about their daily lives in terms of what the protests will mean in Chicago, as well as eyes on our city's police department and how they will handle protesters. I've got to be honest, haven't thought as much about that sort of civil action and large gatherings in Milwaukee, because in that regard, it's less a local story for us, more of a, you know, political one. But I think there's it is among the many, many, many questions that at this point are just unanswered in terms of what a conviction of a former and possibly future president could possibly mean, be it, you know, jail time, be it how an appeals work, what it does for the Secret Service, how this will impact voters. I mean, the questions are so many more, quadruple them versus the answers.
He faces anything from probation to a few years behind bars, though experts are saying jail time is unlikely. I mean, what do you think, Simone, that the implications of his sentencing could be for the Milwaukee convention?
What I'm going to be kind of curious about is, you know, if people are out to demonstrate, who is it? Like, is it going to be Trump supporters who, you know, who stand behind him, who say that, you know, this was political, that this was, you know, that he was targeted in some way, and they want to make a stand at the RNC, you know, against, you know, because I suspect there will be, you know, maybe a couple Republican politicians out there who are, you know, gonna take different sides on this.
Right.
Or are you going to see Trump opponents, Republican or otherwise, who are gonna be out there, who wanna, you know, sort of point to, hey, this is you wanna elect somebody who was just convicted of a crime? Like, that's really what you wanna do right now?
Yeah.
Like, I will kind of be curious to see which population is the one that kind of comes out in force.
Alex, reaction to Trump's guilty verdict from Illinois politicians were as polarized as the rest of the country. Republican Chairman Don Tracy called it a political prosecution, the likes of which has never been seen in the U.S., while Mayor Johnson and Governor Pritzker, as we know, said justice has been served. Any thoughts from you on just the varied reactions that we're seeing here?
Well, as you mentioned, it's pretty polarized, and it's exactly what you would expect from Republicans and Democrats at this political juncture, because we're even starting to see within the Illinois Republican Party, there are some factions that are developing within that, the more moderates versus the more conservative ones. And even folks like Don Tracy, who some might say is on the more moderate side, mm-hmm. is falling in line behind Donald Trump because he is the front bearer of this party right now. And if you're a Republican in Illinois, or really for that matter anywhere else in the country right now, you cannot afford, especially with the RNC coming up so quickly, that to be seen as against Trump. Because, you know, I think we've seen a lot of folks, if they try to do that, if they try to be the I guess not necessarily the anti-Trump candidate, but the alternative. They're not in the party for much longer. They go to do something else.
So next week, Wisconsin Democrats will be in Milwaukee for their annual state convention, but they will have a keynote speaker from Illinois. Alex, fill us in.
Well, that would be Governor Pritzker.
Yeah.
Governor Pritzker is going up to talk to Wisconsin Democrats. And I think part of that is because I think Democrats around the country for a while have thought that J.B. Pritzker is kind of some lifeblood that the Democrats need. He's not afraid to give a fiery speech. He's mm-hmm. not afraid to really go for the jugular, so to speak. I mean, you saw that with the statement yesterday against Donald Trump, calling him all sorts of names.
Any idea what would be on his agenda this time around besides more highlighting Trump's guilty verdict?
You know, that's a good question, because it depends on what tone he wants to set. It depends on, you know, what he wants people to be talking about. I think that there's still a lot of talk in Illinois that he mm-hmm. might be leaving Illinois to run for a higher office. So does he talk about national issues? Does he bring that to the table, or does he try to keep it close to home to make Wisconsin voters
Yeah, I was going to just jump on when you said he's not afraid to go for the jugular. I think it's more than that. It's that he wants to go for the jugular because he wants to make a national name for himself. Yeah. So it is what Alex said, but plus.
And Wisconsin's considered a battleground state, right? And Pritzker's put some real effort into helping Democrats there.
And dollars. I mean, he's got the dollars to give. It's not like that's really a big financial hit to him or anything, but he has that capability. He has done so. Presumably, he will continue to do so. Mm-hmm. And so this is both, I think, in service. He is one of the sort of surrogates for President Biden. So he's not like he has to travel far. he has done this elsewhere. He is a surrogate for the president who is up for re-election this very year, months away. And so there's going to be a lot of that, but it certainly doesn't hurt his own particular profile if looking forward to 2028 or whenever in the distance to further associate with Democrats in that battleground state.
So there was also news this week involving August's Democratic convention. Democrats announced that they'll nominate Joe Biden virtually ahead of the Chicago convention to meet Ohio's ballot deadline. What exactly is that about, Amanda?
Well, so this is because evidently there was resistance from Republicans in Ohio to change the ballot rules without some sort of other side deal that was unappealing and not going to happen. So there was really, I think, in a sense, perhaps no legal choice if you didn't want to have questions about whether Biden could be on the ballot in Ohio legally. And so that's part of it. I think there's also perhaps some question as to why nobody has said this, but just raising the question of whether there is any sort of either fear, perhaps, that there might be disruption, either from the protesters and from those who are truly progressive mm-hmm. at the DNC for this very important, very visible part of the convention as Biden is officially becoming the Democrats' nominee.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why DNC went this virtual route. You can have it all tied up in a very pretty package with a grand bow and not have to deal with any of that sort of very public, all over the network pushback.
Yeah.
So I think it's perhaps twofold. It does sort of take wind, as we're here on Navy Pier, it takes some of the beautiful wind out of Chicago's sails for the convention, because that really is what it's like all about. I think we'd heard previously from organizers of the DNC that they were looking to make moves that would make the convention more sort of social media, more tech. They tried mm-hmm. it during COVID 4 years ago, and the virtual roll call was seen as an entertaining success. Yeah.
Do you agree, Simone? Does this take some of the excitement out of August?
To me, it kind of, because it's interesting because I was reading this story and it turns out that like this is a very public fight that's happening with Ohio right now. But this happens in other states where, you know, you need there's a certification deadline for election officials in that state to put you on the ballot and do all the logistical stuff that goes into an election. And they kind of resolve those behind the scenes, which to me just kind of brings to mind the question of like, well, why do we do it this way anyway? Why do we do it in this convention? What is the purpose of this? Like, right, is how related should that be? And is that to the actual action of voting, having an election in your state and voting for president? Yeah. And it just sort of, you get the dog and pony show. And what does that actually have to do with who we're nominating and who we're voting for?
All right, let's turn the conversation over to Springfield. Alex, I hear you have some breaking news.
Yeah, it turns out this was just announced about 20, 25 minutes ago. Speaker Welch is getting sued. We kind of knew that this was in the works. We knew that something was going to happen. But Speaker Welch is getting sued by some of his own employees, by members of the Illinois Legislative Staff Association. They just filed suit in Cook County this afternoon. Mm-hmm. And they are basically alleging that he is depriving them of their constitutional rights. You might remember in 2022, Illinois voters approved the Workers' Rights Amendment. So they called it Amendment 1 at the time, and now that's part of the Constitution. And they have been trying, this group of employees has been trying to get recognition for their union for more than 18 months now. Mm-hmm. And because of how state law is crafted, they couldn't do it. So they couldn't go to the Labor Relations Board to hold an election to get certified and all that stuff. So they sought voluntary recognition from Speaker Welch for a long time. It went on for more than a year, this effort.
Yeah.
So eventually he put forth some legislation, but it didn't move. He passed it in the fall veto session in October, and then it sat in the Senate. And we are now done with the spring legislative session, and it didn't move. So they filed suit, basically saying, you know, we tried to do this amicably, but, you know, we're not doing that anymore.
Wow.
Let's go.
Wow. Amanda, any thoughts?
You know, I haven't read the lawsuit itself, so I think it is a bit premature to go too deep on this, but it certainly is, I think, a rough look for Democrats who had advocated so strongly for this constitutional amendment protecting workers' right to organize to then have this sort of public pushback. That said, there, I think, are some remaining questions as to how this group has gone about trying to do that work of organizing, who all is on board, whether for example, there was a press release just toward the end of the session really trying to bring attention back to movement on this, and it was panning the very bill that a year ago, or when it had originally advanced out of the House, this group had endorsed. So I think that there are some both maybe organizational questions mm-hmm. there, but a lawsuit certainly brings it to the fore, and it is going to be force some answers from Welch. By the way, the measure did pass out of the House. It's waiting in the Senate. That's a mechanism that you often see. Sometimes it's politically structured that way, and that you can say, well, we tried, sort of hands up.
That's exactly what the union's alleging.
I think there's that. And then there are also, again, some true differences. Sometimes you have a measure stall because the two chambers and their bodies have different priorities, different workups, and there isn't a group of Senate Democrats that mm-hmm. is trying to do the same thing as these House Democrats are.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's look forward then to your reporting, Alex, WBEZ.org, as this
absolutely
evolves.
Yep.
Now, Illinois lawmakers, as we know, they approved the governor's $53 billion state budget this week. So just give us some of the important items that made the cut in the new budget.
Yeah, so this is the biggest budget ever. It's a little bit over $53 billion, and that's actually a bit above and beyond what Governor Pritzker wanted. So he says it's a balanced budget, and I guess when you look at it on paper, it pretty much is. We're spending $53.1 billion. We've got $53.3 billion in revenue, but they had to get there by passing an entirely separate package of what they're calling revenue enhancements, which, you know, tax increases. That's what it actually is. So some of the things that made it were some of Governor Pritzker's initiatives. We're funding K-12 education based on the evidence-based funding formula, $350 million increase. That's per state law. He is his idea to eliminate $1 billion worth of medical debt by $10 million of a state appropriation through a not-for-profit that got approved. CPS did not get all of it, what it was asking for, but there is a dollar per hour increase for direct service personnel that deal with but basically homebound folks, like people, home care workers, they're getting a dollar an hour increase.
Okay.
And there's just a lot, there's a lot in this budget that is.
Yeah. I mean, biggest
so
state,
many nuggets.
Yeah, exactly.
Biggest state budget ever. I want to play a little bit of what the governor had to say about it.
To briefly recap, we lowered costs for working families. We invested in our children. We secured transformational economic development and job creation opportunities, all while strengthening our state's fiscal health.
So let's talk about how lawmakers are going to pay for all of this, Amanda. I mean, what are some of the revenue raisers, aka taxes?
First, can we have a moment? I'm sorry, not to sort of jump the gun here, but to explore how that passed, because while that is part of the package, it was everybody missed it because most folks were in bed, unless you were like Alex, who was unable to sleep that night because the legislature just kept on going. But you have 78, actually right now 77, because there's a seat where that needs an appointment filled. But you have a supermajority of Democrats. And yet, not once, not twice, but three times it took to pass this revenue package. And when it did, it was just barely, with the bare minimum of 60 votes. So you had a lot of Democrats not supporting this very measure. I think, of course, we are in an election year. And so you had some that would be hesitant to get on, endorse what, even if it's called this pretty term of revenue enhancement instead of tax hike, that they were fearful of doing that as they're facing re-election and a tight contest potentially. But I think it also shows that they're not everybody is thrilled with this package. And even though most of how this revenue is raised is the sort of thing that isn't going to impact most people in an obvious sense anyway in their daily life. You're talking about a corporate tax refund and they're not able to claim losses. You're talking about a fee that retailers receive from the state for collecting a tax on behalf of the state, something that the governor has said, do we really need to give them this big of a fee for? It's just a press of a button. Also, a change in the tax that sports books pay. Yeah. And so that is something that these, you know, sports betting outfits have said may chase them out of the state. I imagine that that's a bit big of a threat, but you certainly could also see some of the payouts changing and becoming less for people who, I'm not one of them, but a lot of people have a lot of fun doing it, which is why they're not going to leave the state.
Well, here's the thing. You mentioned that supermajority, which means, of course, they didn't need Republicans to get this budget passed. Not surprisingly, Republicans say they were shut out of the process. I want to play a little bit of State Rep Noreen Hammond, a Republican from Western Illinois.
The budget process is no longer a negotiation between duly elected members of this chamber and the Senate. It's an exercise in bullying and absolute power over the hardworking taxpayers of our state.
Simone and Alex, I mean, does that sound like pretty much what always happens, that the minority party is left out of the negotiating process?
It does, but this time, and what Noreen Hammond just said, and you're right, Republicans say the same thing pretty much every year. We're not included. But this year, it was a little bit different because they had a couple of specific examples of how they are shut out of the process and how what they say doesn't really matter. We talked about it took three times to pass the revenue bill, right?
Yeah.
Well, according to House rules, they shouldn't have been allowed to do that. But because Democrats have a majority, they were allowed to suspend the rules that say that they can't do that, and then they were able to take another vote. That's all they had to do, and you only need a simple majority to do that. So they went crazy about that, and then also, if you look at the back of the budget, probably like page 3100 and beyond or something like that, there's a whole bunch of district projects. We might call it pork. And Republicans, John Cabello of Rockford pointed out, we weren't part of negotiations, so we didn't get any of these district projects. We would like to take things home and show that we're working for our people, but you're not letting us.
$440 million for health care for non-citizens. How did that go over with Republicans?
About as well as you would expect. Yeah. They've been against this program the whole time, not only because there are some folks who think that we should not be providing any services to undocumented residents, but also because it was a sort of an I told you so about how much it's going to cost, because we saw cost estimates last year if this program wasn't going to be reined in at about $1 billion+, mm-hmm. and the state couldn't afford that. So now they're spending $440 million, and that's after they called enrollment and tightened up enrollments and like kicked people off the programs and things like that. It's still nearly $500 million.
Now we're going to walk through who didn't get what they wanted in Springfield, bills that stalled in the spring session. Let's start with sports teams. Lawmakers were in no mood to talk about stadium funding, were they, Alex?
Nope. And I think as you just heard us talk a few minutes ago about the budget and how tight that was and how not everybody got everything they wanted. And Governor Pritzker made it no secret that if you are a billionaire sports owner and you want help building a stadium, you have to give me a really good example of how that's going to be a benefit for taxpayers. And according to Pritzker, and for that matter, legislative leaders, lawmakers, they just didn't see that. There isn't a whole lot of money to do what they're asking. And if you want to get into the specific details of the ask, I could. I don't know if we have the time. But basically, they're asking for, you know, extension of debt and basically borrowing $1 billion that's going to be paid off over the course of 40 years. And part of that includes extending the debt from renovating Soldier Field in 2002 onto that. So all told, I think the Bears are going to put in $2 billion or so, but all told, I think the stadium after 40 years is going to cost about $6 billion all told. Ooh. So, yeah, and that's with interest payments and all that. So, lawmakers are not really in the mood right now.
It doesn't sound like it. Do you think they'll take stadium funding up during the fall veto session, Simone?
I'm sure the Bears certainly hope so. that was the other thing about this is, right, they came out with this proposal in what, early May was when this came out, late April? Yeah. And, like, lawmakers in Springfield were already, you know, in trying to get the budget done, trying to get everything else done. And they were like,
squeeze this in your next 3 weeks.
We're going to do this spring, right? We're definitely going to get it done this spring because we want to break ground and we want to do construction. And everybody in Springfield was like, I'm sorry, what? You want to do what now?
It was a similar reception to Jerry Reinsdorf when he came down a little bit earlier. It's okay, but sure.
Lawmakers also failed to pass cannabis industry legislation that would have regulated Delta 8 and other hemp-based products, Amanda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, they failed on two pieces of legislation. One would have given the marijuana industry, so like legal cannabis, would have allowed for example, customer pickup and drive-through, and would have also some of these social equity applicants where this was supposed to like right the wrongs of the war on drugs that had received and paid for state licenses to craft grow marijuana say that they're not really able to because it's so restrictive. That measure yet again stalled, same as last year. And then also this sort of synthetic weed, Delta 8, it might be known as, or even CBD products. So it's kind of hard to distinguish what we're talking about, but really it's anything and everything that isn't sold at these official cannabis dispensaries, but which you see everywhere that maybe it is sold at, you know, breweries and bars, 7-Elevens, at gas stations. There are studies that have shown that some of these products could be dangerous because they aren't tested. You don't quite know what is in them. And so even those that are part of the hemp industry had been calling for state regulation. It's just a matter of how. And that's really what had held things up. The cannabis industry is saying in general that allowing any of this sort of synthetic weed is unfair to them. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted far stricter regulations. And for the second year in a row, as this fight goes on, instead, Illinois is left with nothing. And so totally unregulated.
You think
industry.
Lawmakers might take it up again in the fall?
There is most certainly going to be continued pressure to do so.
Lawmakers also left Springfield without taking action on reforming the state's prisoner review board. Alex, remind us what was going on there.
Yeah, this all came about because the prisoner review board released Crosetti Brand on mandatory supervised release, even though a former partner of his had requested an order of protection. The Prisoner Review Board didn't know that when they granted him release, and then he immediately went and attacked her, severely injured her, and killed her 11-year-old son, Jaden, who was trying to defend her. So lawmakers came up with a bunch of changes, including if you're still in prison, you can have an order of protection taken out against you. And that's not currently a rule. That was in the bill. Information about how to submit victim impact statements must be readily available to folks. PRB training, like the training that folks have to go through before becoming a prisoner review board member, that's going to be updated. And also, a sticking point was a lot of these hearings are going to be streamed and it's going to be available to the public. And this was something like and those were all changes that were made in the Senate. Some of those changes were made in the Senate, and the governor's office was not happy about that because they saw it as just basically an unfunded mandate.
Yeah. Like
they already have thousands of hearings a year. This is going to be a lot of work for them. Why don't we go to the task force that this bill creates and try to figure out a way to make this work after we pass the bill? That didn't happen. The bill didn't pass the House, and the sponsor, Kelly Cassidy of Chicago, a Democrat, was very upset about that the last day of session.
All right, it's graduation season. I could tell from the kids I saw out there on Navy Pier. I think they were getting on the Odyssey for their middle school graduation.
My high school did our post-prom party on one of those boats.
I was like, congratulations, kids, but out of my way. I'm trying to get breakfast. But we are going to touch on a couple of college controversies. First off, a bill passed in Springfield could significantly change admission to public universities in Illinois. Alex, give us some details.
Yeah, basically the top line here is if you had a step grandfather or uncle twice removed or something or whatever, that's no longer going to matter if you're applying to a university. So they're getting rid of legacy status. And that means that if you have a relationship to alumni or relationship to donors, that's not going to matter. You're going to be treated the same as everybody else. This applies to relatives, in-laws, step relatives, half siblings, family members of your partners, your fiancé, I'm trying to think of the word,
yeah.
But your fiancé doesn't apply, so yeah.
Right. Oh, interesting. The University of Chicago also made some headlines this week, including withholding degrees for four students that were involved in anti-Gaza war protests. Here is what student Yusuf Hazwa had to say.
I have no regrets that this did happen. People in Gaza will never get diplomas ever again. There are some people who will never walk a stage again. And if I need to sacrifice my diploma to talk about that, I'm fine with that.
What are the details here, Simone?
Yeah, so the university has said that they are withholding degrees from these students because they are involved in the disciplinary system for disruptive conduct, their formal disciplinary system, and that it won't be resolved by graduation. And so, they said they received multiple formal complaints about disruptive behavior stemming from the encampment at the University of Chicago, and this is sort of one of the things that they're allowed to do. I think a reason this has, caused such, this is really perking people up a lot is because number one, like not being able to graduate, that's a huge, issue for your future.
Oh, for sure.
And number two, the way that that encampment was taken down, right? That was one of the encampments where university police went in early in the morning and kind of raided the camp and took it down. And there was a lot of reporting around that. And I think I think there are a lot of people on campus and supporters of these protesters who will feel that, this is adding insult to injury, adding, just more being punitive for the act of protest.
Yeah, so basically they might get their degrees and participate in graduation depending on how the discipline committee rules, but they might not get their degree despite, as you said, 4 years of classes and tuition.
Exactly.
Stressful. All right, Amanda, with university presidents being called to testify before Congress, like Northwestern's Michael Schill last week, do you think they're feeling pressure to maybe ramp up the punishment on these protesters?
I'm not sure that U of C is in that situation. I think that by now we've seen this play out. You watched what happened, say, to the president of Harvard. So there's no university administrator where that went unnoticed. They know the pressure, but we're in a blue state. I mean, it's just a sort of different situation, I think, at this point. But I think that the University of Chicago, when they took that action on the encampment, was trying to set an example. And so it doesn't necessarily have to go to Washington and Republicans in Congress that are sort of looking seemingly to do takedowns of higher education administrators. Just at the local level and setting precedent is what it appears to me to be what the University of Chicago is prioritizing. I do not know. I don't cover this to know how a disciplinary hearing is conducted and what all goes into that, I do think that it would be a sort of PR disaster for the university to actually deny diplomas, to maybe not walk in graduation or something mm-hmm. would be one thing. But after somebody has paid tuition and completed coursework.
Degrees.
Yeah. To keep them from that would yeah. be a pretty big step. And so I again, who knows how this will play out, but just an out there prediction yeah. that it's not going to result
well, I mean,
in that.
The University of Chicago has other problems because it announced this week that it's going to pay $5 million to students and former students to settle a class action lawsuit. What's that about?
Yeah, so a student sued saying that the school breached contract, and they sued about remote learning in 2020 when the school switched to remote learning for the pandemic, basically saying that, you know, you told us we were going to be in class. This was the agreement we made when we paid tuition to mm-hmm. the university, and we couldn't be in your world-renowned labs. We couldn't be in your classrooms. You know, this shouldn't have happened, and we should get some of our tuition back. And so the university has reached a settlement, and it will apply to all students who were there between January 2020 and the end of spring quarter 2020, it'll result in, it's predicted, of at least $25 for each student.
Yeah, I tried to do that math too, and I thought I was off, but yeah, so you're on the same, because I mean, $5 million sounds like a lot of money, but there's a lot of students
yeah,
impacted by this.
It's certainly, yeah.
Carry the one, divide yeah. by two.
You know, it's interesting because there have been other similar lawsuits against settlements that have been reached at Cornell and George Washington University, but a similar lawsuit against DePaul was actually dismissed, basically because they found that there was no evidence that there was a promise of in-person learning, right? And so it's kind of interesting to see how these are unfolding at different campuses.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I can imagine if I was a student in 2020, like, and that's a lot of money. Like, it's a lot of money that you're paying. And if there was sort of any change to that, yeah, I'd try to get some of that
actually,
back.
I mean, I was a student in 2020. I was doing my master's degree at that time.
Yeah,
graduated in 2021. So I'm like, do I need to go back and look at some yes. American University paperwork?
Maybe.
University of Chicago made other headlines. What's up with the data breach?
So this is at University of Chicago Medicine. So this is the hospital, right? But there was an email breach that could have resulted in information for hundreds to thousands, maybe up to 10,000 patients, families possibly being exposed. The hospital system said that a hacker had accessed worker emails back in January. And so there was this big exposure basically through the entire month of January when you look at like the information that could have been exposed, it were really social security numbers, PIN numbers, financial info,
yikes.
Like names, dates of birth. Like it's really, really.
This like what we saw happen to Lurie Children's Hospital earlier this year?
I mean,
similar?
Yeah, similar in the sense that, you know, there are these healthcare systems that are being targeted by hackers, by what have you, because they have a lot of personal information, right? So there have been attacks at Lurie, also Ascension and St. Anthony also saw some data breaches recently. And so I think it's almost like it's a pattern, really, that we're
yeah.
seeing of these kinds of attacks at seeking, you know, this personal information.
CTA President Dorval Carter continued to make headlines this week, saying he had been turned into a caricature. He told Alders criticism of him was unfair and racist. Simone, 29 of the 50 Alders have called for Carter to be fired. Does he have a point? Has he become the city's punching bag, the scapegoat for an overburdened, underfunded transit system?
If he has, that it does kind of come with the job, though, right? That's if you're the leader of an agency, if you're the leader of a city, if you are, you know, if you're a manager at a company, right? If you're the CEO of the company, anything that happens with those organizations, institutions ultimately falls on you. And so, you know, I do think that, right, and we always try to say this when we talk about it, there's so much that's happened at the CTA. You know, obviously recovering from a pandemic is no small feat. However, there are things we can point to. Our recovery has been slower than other peer cities. Dorval Carter himself, it's not like he's a new to the role. You know, he has been here for a couple administrations now. And so I think, you know, I can totally see where he's coming from and how it would feel maybe to be in that position and to have 29 Alder people say, hey, you should be out of the job, and
yeah.
have the governor say you should be out of a job. But also that that comes with the territory. Yeah. You're leading the agency.
And I think it's also the sort of agency that touches people in mm-hmm. such a measurable way.
Yes.
People
their
need
day
to get
to day.
Around. It is day-to-day yeah. life. And it is also literally measurable. You can be like, this is how long I waited. These mm-hmm. are the number of buses that were skipped. And it's something so much of government can feel removed unless you work for an agency or really directly depend on those services. But this is one of those things where, like, everybody either rides the CTA or
watches it. You've got access to it in your pocket,
exactly.
right? With your Venture card or, mm-hmm. on your phone even. All right, let's turn to the hip, bustling Fulton Market restaurant district. Private security began patrolling there this week. I remember talks about this. Fill us in, Simone.
Yeah, so these folks were brought on by the Fulton Market District Improvement Association, which is essentially a group of restaurants and businesses in the Fulton Market District who have come together and over the past year or so have been trying to get a private security patrol to happen in the neighborhood. They hired P4 Security Solutions. You might recognize that name from other private security stories in mm-hmm. Bucktown and Lincoln Park. And basically what they do is they tend to employ off-duty or retired law enforcement to walk around, to patrol.
What kind of authority are they going to have?
So, yeah, this is where it gets very squishy. The group has said, like, they essentially want it to be a visible deterrent of, oh, you see someone, they have handcuffs. They are, they are armed in some capacity. Mm-hmm. But they sort of, the security company says that they're kind of there to... they will get involved if there's distress. They can even kind of detain people, but really they're just there as sort of a stopgap if there's something serious until police can get there. The whole concept of private security, to me, like patrolling city streets is so squishy to begin with. Mm-hmm. And until we kind of see encounters happen, unfortunately, I kind of don't know how we're going to see this play out. But
So they're just driving around in these marked cars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
It raises a lot of questions because some of those private forces, when I lived in St. Louis, we had one of these too. Mm-hmm. They're not subject to FOIA because they're a private company. So if there is an instance where they get into something and like people want to know more information, they don't have to do anything. They're not subject to any of that.
Well, and not subject to, obviously the company has its own use of force rules or it has its own conduct rules that it has, but it's not subject to anything that is, overseen by any public agency that we kind of can look at.
A Winnetka-based private equity firm has purchased Oberweis Dairy, known for its ice cream shops and milk that you buy in the returnable glass bottles. Oh, yeah. The company filed for bankruptcy in April. The new owners say that they actually plan to expand the company. Any of you Oberweis milk or ice cream fans?
I mean, I'm not against any ice cream. Give it to me, baby.
Tell us why you don't like ice cream,
yeah,
Amanda.
Right? Oh, it's so delicious.
But I do think that was the choice.
Of course, Oberweis is, I think, well known also because one of its members was very politically active and almost a member of Congress.
Who are you talking about?
There's also that. But I mean,
Jim owner Jim Oberweis.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think this also is resonating for a lot of folks for all those reasons. It's iconic and there's that political connection. It now has been purchased, as you noted, I guess still local if it's a Winnetka company, but beat out, I believe it was an operation out of Pilsen that was focused just on dairy. And mm-hmm. instead the winning bidder is a private equity firm, which, I think there's a lot of suspicion around private equity and what they do with businesses. And an article that I read about this, the head of that firm said, we think of ourselves as family equity and did not say anything about protecting jobs at the factory, but protecting jobs at the very least at these ice cream shops that, yeah. again, dot the 40 locations in the Chicago area. We'll see what comes of it. That the plan he had said was to expand operations, but it comes. This was sort of interesting. Is like fewer Americans are drinking milk. This whole got milk campaign long gone, and now it's like got soy, got oat, got hemp, whatever. So that's one of the issues that Oberweis is facing, and that led to its bankruptcy.
Yeah. Well, Jim Oberweis. Let's be clear. He ran for governor. In 2006.
He ran for governor. He ran for Congress. He was a member of the state Senate. He was very politically active.
Yeah. Do you think his political ambitions had an impact on their success?
I'm sure that there were people maybe who were, he was very outspoken. I'm guessing that there were perhaps some customers who steered away from Oberweis because they disagreed with his beliefs, and maybe some people were fans because of it. He certainly maybe had a more successful career because he had the money to be able to run because of the dairy operation and also name recognition.
Well, 2 weeks ago on the recap, we talked about online furniture retailer Wayfair opening its first ever brick and mortar store in the long shuttered Carson Peary Scott building. Mm-hmm. This was just off the highway in Wilmette. So now comes word that Barnes & Noble plans to open 4 stores in the Chicago region this year. One opened on Wednesday in Lincoln Park. Are we seeing a retail revival, Simone? Is that what's happening here? Are people just ready to shop in person again?
Maybe. I never stop shopping in person. I actually really don't like shopping online. Fun fact about me.
What?
I really don't.
I am a, like, shop local.
You know what? I think Chicago has ruined me because when I first came here, I'm a big fan of the mall. Like, mm-hmm. my kids and I would just love to go to the mall.
Oh, let's go to Oakbrook.
And I would just be like, where are the malls? I don't see malls.
I'll show you.
Yes.
No, it's.
I mean, I've discovered some by now, but Amanda, I'll take you up on that.
Yes, let's go shopping.
Amanda, the look on your face is just like complete.
And ice cream.
Yes, we'll get Oberweis after.
What about you, Simone? Are you...
You've
stayed in the malls. You never left the malls.
I never left. For me, it's about the you know, just walking up Clark Street, walking up, you know, Division, whatever that thoroughfare is that where you've got stores. And so when I see, the Wayfair store is sort of interesting just because it's that trend of like, mm-hmm. you have that corridor in Southport that's like that. It's a lot of online companies that then opened shops, right? And so we're kind of seeing that trend, which is halfway interesting. The Barnes & Noble thing, I don't know. I really thought they were dying and I thought we were going to get our
that's what I thought too.
Our local bookstores, but I guess they're coming back and now we have to go through another round.
I saw the coming soon sign in Lincoln Park 2 weeks ago and I was like, oh, I thought you were gone.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's happening.
It's happening. That's all I could say about it.
It's here.
I think people might be finally realizing that if you want to get something from Wayfair, you don't have to wait for it now. Like you can order it and you don't have to wait 2 days for it. And I think that there are some people who are online shopping now that really have always online shopped. And now mm-hmm. they're realizing, oh, this is another alternative.
So it's
kind of the opposite of what we did.
Check the quality of what it is you're getting.
Exactly.
Before you get it.
I think it's also a meeting place mm-hmm. that, you know, in the post-COVID world, you have a lot of people that still work from home, but it's really work from a coffee shop or something like that. So I have not been to this particular new Barnes & Noble, but I imagine that there will be spots to read, to hang out, as there are, by the way, at lovely independent bookshops and coffee joints all over the city. So I don't know. Spend your limited dollars at all of
them. Yes, exactly. We found out the Air and Water Show will be roaring back into town this summer, but a week earlier to accommodate the DNC. The Blue Angels will be headed here on August 10th. Will any of you be there?
I'll be at the conventions and probably
from the silence.
No, I mean, you can't, if you live in Chicago, you almost are at the Air and Water Show regardless. I mean, at least you're hearing the air.
I live on the lake too. So basically
I work at Navy Pier.
Yeah. There's no hope. You're going to hear
it. It is cool. So that's not a diss, but
it is loud.
Wait, Alex, are you going?
As the Springfield resident, I think the state fair might conflict.
Ooh.
The first weekend of the state fair might conflict and I need to pet cows.
You'll be busy.
Hanging
pet
out
cows,
on the lake
eat corn dogs.
Avosa's corn dog sounds really good right now, actually.
Simone, you were discussing the summer bucket list on Chicago or CityCast Chicago this week. What did you all come up with?
Oh, I mean, we have all kinds of things that we want to do on our bucket list. I really want to go check out the stars in Palos Preserves, one of the darkest skies you can get near Chicago. Mm. You know, we've got some of our folks who want to go kayaking. I don't know. Do you guys have a summer bucket list, something you have to do this summer?
I went kayaking on the Chicago River for the first time last summer.
Oh, cool. That is cool.
If you've not done it, it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it.
I would want to do that. I have not been out on the water, on like Lake Michigan.
Ooh. you got to do that.
All I've done is like the architecture tour on the river. Like, I need to do like one of
those. Got to find a friend with a boat.
I need to find it. It's been 3 years. Where
I'm also looking for friends with boats.
Where are my friends with boats?
If anyone is listening.
Email me at reset. Just kidding. Do not do that. Don't do that. Any festivals that you have to recommend, Simone?
Oh my gosh. List? So we're actually going to be doing a whole like themed festival week on CityCast Chicago.
Okay.
So I'm like knee deep in all the festival prep. There is so much, and there's so much that is already happening.
Quote, festival prep.
Oh, it is.
Oh yeah. What's that, Simone?
It is not as
having a good time at festivals.
Not as glamorous.
Huh? It's mostly looking up calendar dates and do dates make sense. I am really excited for Close to Me. I always go to Midsummer Fest.
I love Midsummer too.
In Andersonville, always a good time. And I think, you know, another one that I just feel like is going to be really good is, Jamila Woods is going to be there. And I'm trying to remember the name of the festival, and it is totally escaping me.
Oh, we got to figure that out.
If anyone can,
I think our control room
is finding it. We're going to get
looking.
There.
We'll
We're
get that answer. In the meantime, Amanda, you've got a baby, which we just talked about.
Do.
Your bucket list is going to look different this summer.
Yes. I was going to say, I don't know if I have a bucket list other than being outside as much as possible and getting to a pool of some variety, having her take her first dip in a pool. I will say I love every year to do the workouts at Millennium Park. I'm super out of shape. Like post this whole baby thing really has me tied up instead. But that is my hope to get to one of those. I love not only working out, or I love in that regard is strong, but I appreciate that. But it's the community. I mean, it is just hundreds of people at varying levels of in shape all coming together. It's sort of high reward but low stress. It's free, so you don't have to work your fanny off. You can just kind of participate and smile, and I bring a water bottle and a book.
I think it's Wicker Park Fest.
Yes.
That Jamila Woods will be at.
Which is obviously always a big time. Always people love going there, but I don't know. I saw that name and I was like, ooh, hello.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like we all have some good stuff coming up this summer. We'll leave it there. That's it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to Simone Alisea of CityCast Chicago, Amanda Vinicky of WTTW's Chicago Tonight, and WBEZ's Alex Degman. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guthman. It was edited by Daniel Tucker and mixed by Linnea Dominic. The news cycle keeps turning and turning, so our weekly news recap gives us the opportunity to slow down. If you enjoy this recap as much as we do, please consider leaving us a rating. It helps more people find us. Thanks for listening and have a restful weekend.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.